Welcome to the Chief of Anything podcast, in this four-tone vierklang format with Catherine Wutz and Dominik Klimek. Our vierklang format talks about the interplay of purpose, vision, values and strategies, and about what happens to companies when we bring these four together. Here I hear firsthand how the vierklang strategy has transformed companies and what I can expect from its implementation.
Hello, Dominik. How are you doing today?
Hello, Catherine. I'm so excited for this episode today. How are you doing today?
I am absolutely fabulous and I'm equally excited because we have a very special episode coming up. Today we have with us the former executive team of Vodafone Qatar. And we're going to make sure you know who's on in the room first. So we're going to do a little introduction round to kick this off. And I'm going to hand over in a second to Jenny. Jenny, if you can tell us who you are, what was your role back then at Vodafone Qatar? And what is your role now? What have you been doing since?
Why, good morning, everybody. Jenny is my name. I joined the Qatar executive team in 2009, so probably one of the later joiners in this team. And I was the chief technology officer out there. So, and prior to that, I'd worked with Vodafone for 10 years. And since that, I've moved into sustainability actually and stayed with the telcos, but working on corporate sustainability to help them improve their carbon footprint and their impacts. So that's me. So maybe I'll just hand over to Jan.
Yeah, thank you, Jenny. Yes, I'm Jan, a long-time HR professional, and a big chunk of that career was with Vodafone, initially in Vodafone New Zealand, then Vodafone Ireland, where I worked with Jenny, and then Vodafone Qatar. And in Vodafone New Zealand, I was lucky enough to work with Graham Marr, and that's when I was first introduced to the purpose-based organization. Culminated, I guess, in joining the Vodafone Qatar exec team in late 2008. I think I was the last but one to join as chief people officer. Stayed there for about 4 years and then returned to New Zealand 12, 13 years ago. Since then, I've continued with my career as HR director for the last probably 8 years. And then I stepped back from my exec role a couple of years ago. I still don't use the R word, the retired word, but I've enjoyed doing coaching and some consulting and having my life back again. And so, yes, life, I live in New Zealand, so life's pretty good. So I'd now like to hand over to Dan, who's on mute.
So if Dan is not here right now, we'll just move over to Michael and then bring Dan in at the end.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for being together here today. Great pleasure seeing you all. I am Michael. Well, my story is, I am from Germany and always had a longing for the world and wanted to see the world, moved around, worked as a consultant for some years, then moved into the big corporate with Vodafone and went to South Africa and then to Qatar. And in that time in Qatar from 2008 until 2011, this is where I met all of you. So nice to see you again. This is where I met Graham, of course. This is where I learned about his model with purpose, vision, values, and strategies. And that profoundly changed the way how I think and how I work and what I've done ever since in Qatar and then later on moving back to my native Germany. So I've been sharing that model probably with tens of thousands of people by now, including some books that we have written together with groups of people and work that we do in our academy. And I'm very chuffed that we are here today together for the purpose of sharing the magic of this kind of leadership approach and that model with people that it can be useful for. Thanks so much. JT, what's your story?
Thanks, Michael. I joined Vodafone in New Zealand back in 2003. At that time, Jan Mottram was our chief people officer, and Graham Marr had been the CEO and had moved on to Australia. But the company had taken his learnings in New Zealand, and we were a model A of the of a purpose-based organization. So I was very, very pleased to find that when I arrived in Qatar in 2008 as chief financial officer, that Graham was going to be our CEO, and that we were going to be a purpose-based organization and design something in our own image. So that was very good news. I spent 3 years I think, at Qatar. Unfortunately, during that time, Graham passed away, and I had the probably unlucky job of being an interim CEO until a permanent CEO arrived. I then carried on with the Vodafone world to Kenya, Safaricom, which is the Kenyan version of Vodafone, for 5 years, and then back to New Zealand and Vodafone for another 3 years, and then basically retired from the Vodafone world. And now I work in, and thought I'd retired too, but it hasn't transpired that way, a software testing, which I partly own, and am the Chief Financial Officer there. And now, Matthew Harrison-Harvey.
Thanks, JT. Hello, everyone. I'm Matthew. I am British, and I am a external affairs regulatory professional. I've worked with Vodafone Group for 25 years. One of the great roles was in Qatar, where I was the External Affairs Legal Regulatory Director on the board and company secretary as well. And that was an amazing experience, as we'll go on to. I then went on to hold roles at Vodafone Group, covering their emerging markets, Vodacom Group, which is based in South Africa, and this looks after the sub-Saharan African markets. And then I went and did a role back at Vodafone, covering their Africa, Middle East, Asia Pacific markets. And then last but not least, I did another startup, which was in Ethiopia. So I went to, in the last 2 years, to do the start of Safaricom Ethiopia, which was my last role in Vodafone. And I'm now about to start becoming a strategic advisor on external affairs and regulatory matters to help organizations achieve their objectives. And I am going to hand over to Dan.
Hi, guys. Nice to see you all and hear you all. Sorry about earlier, the mute got stuck. I joined Vodafone around 2000. And it wasn't until around 2008, 2009, I joined Vodafone in Qatar as the commercial head for the business there. I spent about 3 years in Qatar, and post Qatar, I moved to Asia in Indonesia as a chief commercial officer for a telco there, and moved on after that to another one in the Philippines, where I held a similar role. I did that for a while, and I've since changed to become a little bit more of an entrepreneur. I created two startups more recently, one a health tech startup, and now another startup, which is a gaming and media business. And that's what I'm doing now. Corporate world to startup world. And I'll hand back to either Dominic or Catherine, I think.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dan. And thank you, everybody, for your introductions. It is absolutely incredible to have you all together here. And we know this podcast has been coming for a while. We've been working on getting everyone assembled. And just for our regular listeners, maybe just on the terminology, a couple of explanations. So in this podcast, we might hear the word purpose-based organization, or PBO, once in a while, because that's what our Vierklang model was called back in the days of Vodafone Qatar. So the Vierklang model, as you might know, is the combination of purpose, vision, values, and strategies, and bringing them all together to have people aligned, going in the same direction, working towards the same goals. And my first question out to you guys would be, well, having worked with this model for a long time now, what has the impact been that you've noticed on your career or your life, or both of them, if you like, since you first encountered the model? Jenny, would you like to make the start again with this question? Like, what's been the impact on your life having experienced this model?
So yeah, I may not give you the expected answer, actually. So my first encounter with purpose-based model was in Qatar. When I left, I stayed within the group, but I didn't go back to an organization that was following a similar model, nor did I. In part, I didn't have the opportunity. I wasn't part of a team as such, or leading a team. I had very sort of individual strategic roles. And so the scope to introduce it and and use it was not really there. And perhaps I didn't actually have the confidence to drive it either. But what I found is, you know, moving into sustainability, it's all purpose-based. So I've found since I've moved into sustainability that it's become so much more relevant. And I kind of wonder how I missed it for so long and how it wasn't part of just normal organizational culture, because it's a lot of it is just really good practice, you know, and ultimately leading to the same sort of success that all the stakeholders want. So I suppose for me, and those that know me will know I'm a bit of an introvert, so this is a lot of easy decision to participate in this, but for me, it's becoming more relevant, I suppose. So it's also an opportunity to refresh all of that. It's becoming more relevant with every new job I take. So perhaps that's not the answer you're looking for, but I'm kind of looking forward to, well, I am beginning to harness it now, even in my own setup and new job just in the last month. So yeah, I can see its relevance going forward, sure.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jenny. And there is no right or wrong answers. We're talking about life as it happens, right? One thing, just if I may ask you a follow-up question, is you know, having worked in a purpose-based organization and then moved on to an organization where that wasn't as present and where the people maybe weren't aware of the different elements of it, what was the biggest difference that you noticed moving from one type of organization to another, and maybe now back towards the purpose-led?
I think it just becomes all very task focused, quite short-termism, moving from one to the other. I think when you're in a purpose-based organization, you have a really solid framework for all your decision-making. It's a very stable framework because you worked hard to define it and agree it. And so it's very embedded and very integrated. And I think when you, and from that perspective, it offers great clarity in how you move forward. I think when you move back, then you're much more into the task fixed short term, what do we need to do today? And you kind of, it's easier to lose sight of the bigger picture. It's easier to forget about people. It's easier, you know, to focus on what you're doing rather than the whole. And I suppose one of the principles I really believe in is that principle of, you know, rising tide raises all boats. And I think that's really consistent with a purpose-based model and is not, you know, with those that are not. I mean, it's just easily lost in when you move to an organization that doesn't have that same framework and thinking behind it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jenny. Brilliant insights. Jan, if we move on to you, kind of like, what's the impact been for you in your life having, you know, gotten to know this model and having used it?
Thank you, Catherine. Well, I first came across it, and I'd been in HR, gosh, I'm showing my age now, but probably for 30 years, and I'd worked with, I don't know, 10 different CEOs and various strategic frameworks. And there's a gazillion out there. And then in, must have been 1998, the company I was with, which was called Bell South, got acquired by Vodafone, 100%. Number of the existing exec team were moved on, and a new exec team came in, largely from Vodafone Australia, one of which was Graham Marr. And it's fair to say, because of the disruption of being bought, people leaving quite quickly, new people coming in, the exec team was, I think, dysfunctional would be a pretty good description of it. Different people with different agendas, no real clarity. We had all of a sudden amazing funding from Group, and there was this real sense of expectation and possibility that we could do something. And under Graham's leadership, with the help of an external facilitator as well, we worked through, and at that time we actually called it a values-based organization, so it was a VBO for quite a number of years in New Zealand. And for me, what it did was it really brought clarity around, I think, the four things that all stakeholders, particularly for me in my role as head of people, the four things that people want to know and need to know. And that was where you're going, what your vision is, what you're going to do to get there, what your strategies are, how you're going to work together, which is your values. And then the thing that holds all of that together is the purpose. And I think I'd worked with other organizations that might have had a vision and they might have had some strategies, but never the integration and the power that comes from the integration of all four of them. And I just saw it unlock the potential in New Zealand of all the people in the organization. And we went from about 500 people to about 1,200 people in a very short space of time. And having that model and that clarity around those four things was just so energizing and so amazing. So that was a pretty special time. And so when the opportunity came again to work with Graham and to work with a purpose-based organization again in Qatar, there was, even though it was such a weird, wonderful, wacky place to go and live in, it was just too good an opportunity not to be part of that team. And I just knew that the purpose-based organization would, and I think as Jenny expressed it really well, it would integrate everything we did, the decision making. It could be used, the same model can be used internally with people, externally with customers. It can be used with group, it can be used with partners, it can be used with customers. And, that simplicity and clarity that it gave was just amazing.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Jan, for sharing. And when you said wonderful, wacky place, everybody's faces were lighting up here in the room. So thank you so much for that as well. Dan, we'll move in on to you. What is kind of the effects you've noticed? Thank you.
So for me, I obviously echo everything that Jan and Jenny mentioned earlier. And I'd like to add a couple of other things, because I did actually obviously go through the purpose-based organization in Qatar, but I did do it also in Australia with the Vodafone team there in Graham. But post the Qatar business, I moved into a couple of telcos after that, where I initiated the PBO, VBO, the Verklan model into those organizations. And the things that stood out to me in particular, being in Asia, where you have very large numbers of people in the workforce, the teams of 6 to 10,000, the simplicity of the model and the simplicity that it gives to the teams and the leaders of the organization to communicate incredibly clearly what those four items are, and then provide some basic tools to everybody in the organization to ensure that they're capable and competent to execute against them, is really where I think it takes it from a strategic model to something that can be executed by anybody across the organization. So whether you work in a retail outlet, a call center, a network, engineering, everybody can obviously live that model, and you're supported throughout that with tools and mechanisms that are really, really quite easy and simple to understand. And I think that for me is sort of two additional elements that make a big difference to the model and how I've seen it executed in different markets.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Dan. We'll move on to Michael.
The first time that I learned about the model, I will always remember that very joyfully. Matthew was there. Maybe J2, you were there too. It was in the Sheraton first floor meeting room. And I remember the setting. I remember the light. I remember exactly how I was feeling. It was one of those magical moments where I know exactly where I was and how I felt. And up until that time, we were working frantically with a lot of pressure to launch this business within 9 months. And the expression I would use is we were running around like a headless chicken. We had a lot to do. There was a lot of activity. We were hiring people left, right, and center and making all sorts of plans. But by that time, I had the awkward feeling that I made maybe the worst decision of my career. Because everything was chaos and there was no plan. There was no master plan. And the interim CEO at the time kind of came in every 3 or 4 weeks and had very little time. And that was okay. I was happy with his degree of ambivalence. And then was that first meeting in that room where Graham showed up in jeans, black t-shirt, on his socks, no shoes, walked up to the flip chart and showed his flip chart and said, this is how we're going to run this company with purpose, vision, values, and strategies. And I remember immediately, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be very different now. This guy actually seems to have a plan for how he's going to approach this. He knows how he's going to approach it. And I think I can learn something here. And that's exactly what happened. And what unfolded then was absolutely magical. Movie stuff. This could be a Hollywood movie, what came out of it. Super successful with all the highs and the lows. And a key learning that it's all about the people. What happened after all this, fast forward for me and what I've taken with this, I have been using this model in planning and thinking my own life. I still have the chart hanging by my door. I do try to look at it almost every day, updated at least every year. I have a PowerPoint with 14 years versions of it. It's nice for reflection. A lot of stuff that didn't come true, but generally it did help me to guide me on to live the life that I really wanted to live. And I've had a fair share of chaos in my personal life too. And ever since then, in my professional path after that, I have used it in every venture that I invested in, every company that I co-founded. As a facilitator and as a trainer, I have shared with thousands of people, and I've seen the magic unfold hundreds of times, and it never has failed. And so for me, this has been one of the greatest, most useful learnings of my life. And I'll forever be grateful for Graham and the time that we all had together learning about this, which was the first time for me. And I'll close with this. I asked Graham about 2 years in, I think the third year, I said, well, how about we try something else? There are so many other great strategy models. And I felt like experimenting. And he had a very clear answer. And that was, this is how I'm going to run this company. And if you like it, yeah, cool, you can stay. And if you want to do something else, I'll help you find another job. No problem. But this is how we are going to run this company. And it was clear that it was his prerogative as CEO to make that choice. I fully respected the answer. And that in itself was a great learning again for me, because he was so clear about this is him, this is his way. And otherwise, there's the door and it's cool.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael, for sharing. John, what about you?
Yeah, before I joined Vodafone, I was a management consultant. And as you can imagine, management consultants are really focused on the strategies, the what, the tasks. I've got to do this by this date, get this deliverable. And the where, meaning often it's a financial KPI. It might be we're going to be a $60 billion company or whatever the number happens to be. And when I joined Vodafone New Zealand, they had what was then called the values-based organization, which was had the two circles, which was the what intersected with the how. And that really intrigued me, because I was very much on the what side and not conscious of how I projected myself or how I acted. And what those values, as we call them, gave me is this is in this organization, how I act and how I interact with people. And then we went to Qatar, and Graham then created the PBO. For me, that was an extra step with the why. And our why in Qatar was to make the world a difference for all people. And that really made resonance, because Qatar is really for Qataris and everyone else is there to build the castle. And we were there to make sure that everyone who didn't have a voice had a voice and were able to, for example, call home at prices that were what they could afford so they could interact with their families. So that's what we meant by saying to make a world of difference for all the people. I just want to make people remember and see that. I don't know if you can on my screen, but that was our PBO and it was very colorful. I then took, when I went to Kenya, I took this concept to Kenya. They latched onto it and we had our own PBO. Same model, just different hows. Different strategies. Why in a case like Kenya was very much pretty similar in terms of changing the lives of people in Kenya. And you know, there's a lot of poverty there, 51% below the poverty line. So, you know, it's how do we help them get somewhere and be able to interact? Because the communication is the most important thing for anyone to run a business and to set up a business and to find a job. And it was so important that this thing is in reach of everyone in the world. So I was really proud of taking Graham's model onto the next entity, which by the way is a very big entity and they latched onto it, but without all the colors. When I joined my friends in their business, the testing consultancy in New Zealand. And first thing I did is I brought this model in there. And we did the same thing that we did in Qatar, is we were really careful about every single word of our strategy, every single word of how we're going to act. And it really brought us together, because up till then, it's just chaos. And what this does is just brought us into a plan on a page, just if you like to call it that. So I will always utilize the model. I think it's nicely balanced, and I constantly need reminding about the how, and that's my Achilles heel, and everyone knows that. So it's who I am, and I love the fact the model is so simple and can be on one page.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, John, for sharing. I'm hearing clear direction is something that's been sticking out for a lot of people. Absolutely. And we'll move on to Matthew. Matthew, last but not least on this question, what's kind of like your main takeaway, the main impact you've noticed?
Sure. I think the team have really covered it fantastically well. I was also at that same meeting, which Michael referred to earlier. I'd never seen anything like that before in my career. So it was a complete something new. But I think I've seen lots of presentations and lots of models since Qatar, and obviously before that a bit. But I think the difference was the authenticity of it. So Graham, 100%, as Michael touched on, passionately believed in this, the way of working, and I'm sure we'll cover some of that on this podcast. So it's quite interesting. So subsequently, I went to an organization which they tried to bring the PBO model. They had a consultant working with them, some I think most of us know, who went down to this market, and they tried to cut and paste our PBO in Qatar to this organization, and it didn't work. And that was because the leadership from the top didn't. Fantastic leaders. Some of them are very close friends of mine, and I've worked with them a long time. But they just, it wasn't their model, and they didn't really believe it. They believed in a different way of working. So for me, the combination of the clarity of the model, the balance, with the authentic belief in it and living the PBO is key. And for me, subsequently, when I've done different roles, whether it's been part of teams or organizations and management teams as well, sometimes I've been able to sort of help shape it, to move it along the PBO model. Sometimes it's actually just my own PBO and the way that I want to work and how I want to work within a organization, and particularly in life. For me, the model, actually, this is one of the things which over time you sort of realize a bit more around. Actually, the PBO is not just about work, it's about everything, your personal life as well. And like Michael, I regularly sort of check in and update my PBO, and it, from the time that I was working with these guys to now, it's completely checked. And yeah, I'm a big believer in it. We've provided people buy into it and really commit to it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Matthew. And from what I've heard so far, is this model brings a lot of clarity, a lot of balance. You're living it, a lot of simplicity, and you're all very proud to having been part of that organization. What I would love to know after this impactful introduction by Graham Maher back in 2008, what's your fondest memory of this model's application in the month and the years later? How did this model turn out to influence the decision you were making? And maybe some of you has a great story around this. Who wants to go first? Michael.
I have a story I remember when you asked that. We had these quarterly workshops. So how the model was applied is that every quarter we got together, first as the executive team, small group, then with the wider leadership team once we had grown to that stage, and then with an all-hands meeting. And these all-hands meetings could stretch over 2 days. Sometimes they would involve us all dressing up in costumes. especially as the exec team being on stage. You know, I remember amazing moments of that were very comic in a way. You know, those tight, colorful circus director uniforms that we wore on one occasion. And at the same time, it was a very serious business workshop where everybody was involved in implementing the whole model into the organization. And the memory that springs to my mind is in the very first time, I think this was in Education City in that room there, and we were going through the values. And I think by this time we had already grown to like 80 people in the organization. So it was a big group all of a sudden. I mean, we started with 4 and within 6 months we were at 80. And I remember when we went through the values and we asked the people in the room what they remembered. And there were members of the team, some of them very junior, who knew everything by heart. I remember the values in particular, and Tina Ranjan, who later moved from customer care into the marketing team, was, you know, like literally very enthusiastic eyes, and every value she could recite from heart, and other people in the room could too. And I saw that in people's eyes, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. They are really digging this. It's really in their hearts. And that was a very inspiring moment for me that I remember.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Michael. Anybody else? What's your fondest memory of this model's application? Matthew, yes, you're first.
When I went to Qatar, you know, I just got married. We didn't have children and stuff like that. So, and then we were blessed enough to have our first son. And I went to Qatar. I think I was 32. So I was quite young, and doing that type of role, I'd never done that type of role. And it's startup, and also the type of person I'm at, I'm all in, yeah? All in, committed, work. So work-life balance at the time, there was no work-life balance. And I just remember Graham saying to me, look, your priority is your family at the moment. Yeah, the work will take care of itself. The team will take care of it. And it was a bit alien to me. And so this is what JT was saying earlier about this balance of the what and the how. And the how in this case was I needed to be home with my family for the birth of my first son. And that was despite the fact that we're sort of in this crazy startup project, et cetera, et cetera. But I generally took, I think maybe a month I was away from the business, back in the UK where Thomas, our first son, was born. And I look back on that now and I think that's incredible. And for Graham to have done that, and it really made an impact on me. And so subsequently, when, you know, I've gone into leadership roles and running teams and leading teams and things like that, and, you know, some of the jurisdictions I've been operating in, you know, they're quite pretty complex jurisdictions with all sorts of challenges, personal issues, etc. And I remember one person in my team, she fell ill, seriously ill. And I remember the time when Graham said, be with your family. And for her, this person, you know, I said to her, forget about work. The focus is for you to get better. And she did get better. And I remember getting into trouble because I sort of said, go home, you know, do what you need to do and stuff. And so for me, you know, the PBO and living the PBO in the case that Graham provided to me, it really left an impact and has helped me with those decisions that, you know, there's always work to do in businesses, and but sometimes, you know, the personal stuff is more important than the work, actually all the time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Matthew. And seeing that this like purpose-driven leader also applies this method in like sending you, okay, your son Thomas is being born, like please go there, be with your family, to combine like business and family in such a beautiful way. That's fantastic to hear. Thank you, Matthew. John, you want to say something as well. What's your fondest memory of this model's application?
It's the model and all that goes around it. So one of Graham's core tenets was authenticity. So what that meant for him and to get us to do is you come into the office with the same mindset that you have at home. So you don't check yourself, your true self, in at the door and put on a suit and walk into the office. This is part of your life. You know, this is a huge part of your life working. Therefore, don't be a different person at work. Be who you are. And that's, and you had to make sure that that worked with your values, how you act in the company. There's no question you have to do that. But if you're feeling depressed at home, maybe you share that with someone at work. You know, you don't be two different people, because that creates stress in your life. And with Graham, you had the model, and it's all on a page, and literally you just wanted to strive, and because it was human. And one of our values, we had two iterations of it, and the second iteration was when Vodafone came out with its own, Vodafone Group came out with its own values, which was speed, simplicity, and trust. And we did struggle to shoehorn that into our values, but we sort of had to. But it actually made some sense. Speed, meaning working at speed, you know, act quickly. Simplicity, meaning, you know, don't look for the most complex type of answer. Often simple is correct. And trust is trust other people to do their work. So it sort of worked, but it was a different to how we were. So it was, for us, that was a moment of, okay, so this is a bit corporate-y telling us how to do our values. It felt a bit uncomfortable putting that in, but we got to grow and love it and like it. But one of the ones we kept of the five values that we had was worldliness. And as Michael pointed out, we went from four people on day one to 80 people and then much more. Every Jan, you'll remember, we may have had 60-odd or 50-odd country representatives, people from different countries. So we had this massive mix of cultures, and that was our worldliness. And how do we act in that way with all these diverse ways of working and diverse expectations, diverse accents? For example, New Zealanders speak at a speed of light normally, and someone who's not got the first English as their first language, and we had plenty of those people, wouldn't understand what you're saying. So that helped you check yourself and just go, hold on a minute, you know, we're a diverse set of people. How do we act? And the thing that I've always enjoyed the most and remembered the most is when Michael Port brought in the color model. I call it the color model. You have the real model name, but I'm simple, so I call it the color model, the red, yellow, green, and blue. And everyone did it together, and you found out what other people's natural style was, which effectively helped you to figure out how to communicate with it. For example, my 2IC in finance was very blue, which means he was very analytical, which meant maybe like Jenny, introverted, in that she wouldn't or he wouldn't give an answer straight up. And you shouldn't expect that, because they want to think about it first. They want to make sure that the answer is right. Whereas probably Michael and I and Dan would open our mouths and off we go first, and the brain would get into gear while we're talking. And Jan, being the consummate people, you know, just the greenest person ever. Probably not really. So it really helped us to learn how to communicate to each other. And in the Middle East, that's very family orientated. Family comes first. And to sit down and say, how did you go on those deliverables, is the first thing you say, is not more. How was your weekend? How's your family? Da 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 da. And then ask those questions. And this whole environment was empowered by the PPO.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John. Jenny, what do you want to add?
Both Matthew and John just been talking about that authenticity. And I suppose this isn't my fondest memory, but it's my strongest memory, or one of my strongest memories, which was, you know, we spent, was it a huge amount of, well, a huge amount of effort, you know, in building authentic relationships with each other and giving and receiving feedback, which was so uncomfortable. Initially, and it was definitely something that, you know, I struggled with, and, you know, crossed my boundary. So we talk about bringing our whole selves to work, but for me that was even more than going beyond. But what I suppose the legacy of that was when Graham passed away unexpectedly, and I suppose one of my strongest memories around that was how the team functioned in his absence, because he was a, I mean, the model is strong, and he was a charismatic leader, and, you know, he invested so much time in us and in us building our own skills so we could develop our own authenticity, but consistent with the model. And then, you know, when he passed, those relationships were really, really strong. And some of them really came into their own at that stage, because we had this trust and we had this investment And I think that's one of my strongest takeouts from that whole experience in Qatar is what that investment can yield.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jenny. And I think it's just wonderful to see that if someone or the leader like passes away unexpectedly, that all the investment that he has been doing like in the executive team like pays off for such a long time. I would like to dig a little bit deeper on this question. When Graham passed away, suddenly what happened with like the Vierklang, the PBO after that? Like, how did all the others experience this? And maybe like Dan, do you want to take the first shot on this question, or who'd like to go first?
I think from a model perspective, one of the important things with the model is, you know, that ability for us to come together as a team. We worked as a team. We're incredibly close as a team. So it obviously, his passing really affected us all dramatically. And, you know, it was very, very difficult for us as a leadership team and as a company to overcome a loss like that. But what we obviously, the model itself also helps you in the sense that it gives you the ability to also deal with things that come, you know, out of your control. And there was a specific model, which is the event itself can be unexpected. But if you change the way that you deal with things and you take control of that situation, which is, you know, your own input into that, then you have the ability to affect the outcome. And I think, you know, having learned the models and the organization that learned those models, I think, you know, without those sorts of tools, it would be, you know, in a much worse situation than what it was. And I think, you know, they're the sorts of things that really help you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan. Jen, what's your take on this question?
For me, it personally was an incredibly difficult time. Still feels quite raw, even after 13 years now since Graham, nearly 13 years since Graham passed. And I guess seeing the impact not only on the organisation, but on Graham's wife and immediate family. One of the things about Qatar is that you don't only spend a lot of time working together, but the living arrangement was also very close as well. So in the gated community where we were living, a number of the exec teams, including Matthew and JT, and were literally neighbours. And Michael and Jenny weren't that far away, and Dan wasn't that far away. So your home life and your work life were inextricably linked. And Jenny Mars, Graham's wife, was part of that community. So I think my most vivid memory of that time is all, it is a bit of a blur, but it was, what did we need to do? And what did I need to do to give Jenny the support, having lost, you know, her life partner, love of her life, together for nearly 13 years, and the complexities of dealing with a death in a place like Qatar, even things like repatriation of a body, and I won't go into all of that, getting money out of Qatar. It was all pretty dramatic and traumatic. But I think, as others said, I think the trust and having the team that you knew were there for you as well. So that's what got me through it. And that's, I think, what got the rest of us through it. And we've talked a lot about the PBO, and a few of us have referred to it, but I think it's the tools that sit underneath it that you pull on when the going gets tough. And Dan, you mentioned the event, you know, plus your sponsor reaction, you know, can determine the outcome. You know, that and many other of the tools which came to be, you know, how you approach things on a day-by-day basis. I think that's certainly what helped get me through it. And I, you know, even coming up to this podcast, I was feeling a little bit nervous, not having done one before. And I remembered one of the tools was ABC. ABC is accept you're going to do it, breathe, center yourself, and then get on and do it. And I, you know, there's dozens of these little tools that that you pull on, particularly when the going gets tough. And And just as another quick mention, one of the things I feel really proud that we did that I think, again, kept the organization going during that difficult time was we introduced a leadership program for all team leaders. So anybody that had anybody reporting to them, called Stepping Stones. And it was a program to equip the leaders with those PBO tools, the rocket ship exercise, the how you align your personal values with the results, how coaching models. And I think that being PBME, that was a fantastic program. And I think it really, really enabled the model to keep going because the people were equipped with the tools that underpinned it, even though, you know, this core leader was no longer with us.
Thank you so much, Jan. And that sounds super powerful. Michael, I've seen your hand go up. What would you like to add?
I remembered something, which is we refer to the team in our official internal language as the family. It was the Vodafone family. And I have to admit, oftentimes I was skeptical of using that term for the work context. And I have seen other organizations also refer to their team as the so-and-so family, and which wasn't as authentic as what I saw in Qatar. I think in Qatar, that was the closest that I've seen to that being really truthful, that there was a family-like connection. And when times got tough, that is also when that paid off and when people could rely on each other, kind of like in a family where, you know, it gets really tough in the end, we're all going to stick together. And that was impressive. Also, I'm still a bit apprehensive about using that term in business. And I'm, you know, in that case, it reminded me, Jen, when you said, you know, when it got tough and all of the circumstances and dealing with those hardships, that's when all of this really paid off. And basically how I see what the school that I went through, and I think many in the team went through, it was a phenomenal personal development journey with all these models and all these techniques. It was about personal leadership. It was about business leadership. And it made us all stick very closely together through the two really harsh times sometimes. I'm grateful for that.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for sharing, Michael. Maybe to dig a little bit deeper on what Jan and Michael, you both just said. So what I've heard from all of you was, you know, like we really stuck together as a family. We supported each other when times got tough. There was incredible deep trust amongst the members of this team, and we had the right models to support each other. What would be your favorite models? We've heard from Jan, it was the ABC, Accept, Breathe, Center, right? What are some of the other things maybe the others have taken away? What's your favorite tool that you still have in your toolkit and you like to be using nowadays? Jan, you've got another one.
Sorry, perfect. I can
yes.
sneak in another one. The one I've used consistently is the shorthand is the TEV model. The T is talent, the E is experience, and the V is values. And I guess being in people side of the business, having that as a recruitment tool was amazing. And the theory behind it was that you're looking ideally when you're selecting someone to join the organization for all three things to be strong in talent, experience, and values. If you have to, given that not many people tick all the boxes on each, if you have to compromise on any of them, you compromise on the E, but you never compromise on the values. And I can recall doing, and I think some of you were part of this as well, but doing a whole series of recruitment around the region. We went to 10 different countries, trying to bring people in primarily for the call center and retail. And we used that model to try and select people. And one particular one stands out when we were in Dubai recruiting there. And part of the assessment center was a person on reception who was one of the assessors. And they assessed when people rocked up for their assessment center. How did they treat that receptionist? And in that part of the world, you often get a lot of arrogance that the lower level people are treated with disrespect. And the receptionists come assessor would be assessing the extent to which they spoke to them as the receptionist when they didn't think they were being assessed. And we had a whole range of selection tools, but I always thought that was pretty awesome that, to use the TEV model in assessment centers in, as I say, 10 different countries. Pretty amazing.
Wonderful. So quick question. What happens to a person? So I find somebody high talent, extreme, great experience, and the values fit isn't there. But this person, like, especially in sales, they can make a lot of sales. You can see them rise up in the whole organization, but they're just a really bad value fit. What would you recommend to this person?
Move them on. And in fact, we had a very clear, if it was, if they ticked the two of the three boxes, if they had talent and they were values aligned and didn't have experience, you gave them a chance to get experience. If they had the experience and you weren't sure about the potential, but they were values aligned, then you gave them opportunities to develop that. A number of times, and obviously it's not appropriate to mention names, but a number of times there were people that we did take a punt on, because you can't, in an interview situation or assessment sense, you can't always assess values. And often it didn't turn out, and we had to make some tough decisions. However, sometimes giving people the chance to explore what's important to them and what their values are. And we had this rocket ship exercise, which we took everybody through, which helped. Sometimes people's values were different than what they were presenting to the world. So, my mantra for recruitment was always, if in doubt, don't proceed. Particularly if in doubt about the values fit, because it's not fair on the individual if they're less likely to be successful. And if you do proceed, then make a tough decision.
Thank you so much, Jan. And we'll kind of like move on to John.
One model I've used a lot is that Boston grid, the four squares, with on the vertical axis, your delivery, your performance, and on the horizontal axis, someone's how values align there. And you've got the four squares. And obviously, you really want your stars to be in the top right-hand quadrant, who are very values aligned and delivering great results. But when you change job, you're probably going to drop down vertically that gradient to the square below until you get up to speed on it. When you get a promotion or whatever, you're not going to be delivering at day one. But your values align, and therefore you know that the person is going to make it because that's who they are. And it moves them up again to the performance spot. Whereas on the inside two squares, you've got someone who's not performing well and it's not values aligned. Well, that's probably a bad hire. And you often get management consultants sitting in the left top square, which is performance, 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 without the values alignment, without the how they are acting to be able to get that performance. And we would call them terrorists. So, it's so important to be balanced, to look for how am I delivering and how am I acting along the way. So that for me is the way I evaluate someone in a 6-month or an annual review, where they're sitting on that chart, and deciding whether to keep someone or continue to work harder on that person because they just need better training to get into the top delivery, but they've got the right values.
Yeah. So combining the what and the how.
Yeah.
In the evaluation. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, John. And I think Matthew has something to add as well.
Yeah, this is more on the what. So one model that I've regularly used myself and with teams is stop, start, continue. Because often you find in business and life, there's so many things and things are changing and evolving. And so it's all about how you prioritize. And it's very interesting when you sort of introduce this to the teams for the first time. Well, we're going to have to stop something rather than just add more and more and more. And I think a lot of organizations struggle with that. But that model, if done well, is super helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing, Matthew. Michael, what's your favorite model that you've taken on?
I'll go after Dan. Dan, go right away. Go ahead.
You sure? I might get yours.
Do it.
All right, let's see. It's one that I probably haven't used enough of, to be honest, and I think I should. This has helped me reflect, actually. It's the decision-making model. So it's been very clear about how decisions are made in organizations. So then again, it's very simple. I decide with your input, we decide, or you decide. And I think it's a fantastic model that gives clarity to the organization, your team members and others, as to how to make decisions in the organization and ensure that there's clarity and simplicity around it. That's a model that I think is fantastic.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to take. So I'll pick another one. The other one I remember is this journey going from a hierarchical structure to a collaborative structure and the growing pains that can bring, and to be persistent in moving into the collaborative space. And I think we had the holacracy at the very end, extreme organizational form. And where the take, at least at the time when we worked together on this, was, it is a collaboration, but it's not a holacracy. It's definitely not a hierarchy. And collaborating takes processes to trust, takes people to trust in those processes and working together. And I remember also that is not a democracy, but it's I call it a collaboracy, kind of a amalgamated word out of all of that. So this was new to me in that shape, collaborating in that way and working with people. And I have been on a 15-year journey ever since with this concept. And that is one of the things that definitely helped me change myself in the way I work, to work with people and to collaborate and to be open about the result that comes out and not to try to influence that into how I think the result should be, but rather work with people and the process and then see what comes out. And collaboration, keyword for me, out of the models we use to make the PBO turn from a plan to reality.
Absolutely. We'll move on to John, and then after John, Jenny. John, go ahead.
Jenny, sorry. I should have said one key two words: personal responsibility. Take personal responsibility. It's so key to this whole thing. You can't just expect things to happen for you, or can't bitch about, or you shouldn't bitch about things that have had done to you. You've got to take personal responsibility to get yourself to where it and your company and your interaction with people where it needs to be. So that's a key two words for me.
Brilliant. Thank you. Jenny, what's your most favorite tool in your toolbox that you've taken on from this time?
I think it's probably all been talked about, but the one I still really have to work on is the E plus R equals O, and changing my so it's the event and either your response or reaction, but I'm still working on moving my reaction to a response to determine the right output. So I think that's going to be a lifelong model and journey for me personally.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
The other thing that struck me when Mike was talking about moving to the collaborative, that sounds all very, controlled and positive. And my experience of that was that it was really provocative. And, it was brilliant, don't get me wrong. And I think, I spoke about it earlier, I think it was one of the things that brought some of the best outcomes and most solid and stable operating environments ultimately. But the journey there for me was like turbulent and provocative, and I found it really, really challenging. So I just wanted to say that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jenny. Now we have heard so many wonderful things about how a purpose-based organization and the Vierklang model can create this family-like structure that is a team that trusts each other. And we heard so many tools like the ABC model, the TEV model for hiring, like team is a family, the ERO model, start, stop, continue, how important collaboration is, taking on personal responsibility, and then the decision-making model. So there's so many brilliant insights on how I can run my whole company so much more effectively. If we now have like listeners who are maybe in the decision-making position, like the CEO, the management team, or just people in the team, because I heard you say, like, I brought the Vierklang model, the PBO model, into the new company I'm in. Like, as a closing thought for this podcast, what would your recommendation be if somebody has not experienced the PBO, has not experienced the Vierklang, is not familiar with these tools? What would the best way for this person moving forward be to get into an organization or create an organization that is as impactful as Graham Maher and Vodafone Qatar has been for you?
My experience was and has and still is first of all, get marketing and HR on side because they drive the enthusiasm and the presentation of it. And also, if your CEO maybe a bit more command and control, potentially, it won't be natural for your CEO. So unless they're like a Graham Maher CEO who naturally that way. So you've got to get the people and the creatives to buy into the theory and then the model and then step back and let them go because they will convince the CEO and the whole company around messaging.
Wonderful. Thank you, John. So buy in the model and then find the right messaging and then definitely get the CEO and the management on board and then it will go automatically on from there. What about the others who would like to go next? Jenny.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah, so, so from maybe a different perspective, you know, Jan talked about the TEV model. And, you know, I am definitely of the age when I am way too old to be working for people who don't align with my own values. I'm so past that. So, and I think that's definitely a legacy from Qatar and working with Graham, but also working with all the people on this call who were fantastic peers and colleagues and I learned a huge amount of. And I think, you know, I've taken a new job recently. And, you know, for me, I wasn't working full time recently. So it was a move back into full time, which I wasn't sure I was really prepared to do, you know. So for me, the decision was hugely dependent on the values of the people that were recruiting me and the values of that company and what they want to achieve. So I think, you know, yeah, I mean, choice is a luxury. I completely get that. But, you know, if you do have the opportunity to make those decisions up front before you go into a company, I think they're hugely important, actually. And if I could tell my 20-year-old self that, I think that would be one of the really big messages I would give myself.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jenny. Yes, values and you were all nodding when Jenny said that are so important to make the right decision for me and the whole company. Who wants to go next? Matthew.
I think it's what Jenny said, to be honest. I've worked in different organizations where, you know, with hindsight, maybe it wasn't the right thing. So you need to, it needs to be authentic. And I believe that you need to find the right place for yourself at the right stage of your life because you go through different phases of your life and there's lots to come. But I do think that's why you got to start with yourself, actually. Yeah. Who you are, what you want to achieve, your own PBO, and then see if you can find the right place for you at that time in your life. What I've seen over the years, including my own experience, when you go into something which isn't quite right, it normally does, you can make it work, but you probably don't enjoy it as much. So I think finding the right home is really, really important. And if it doesn't work, if it's not right, then I think change it is really important. And sometimes the change is made by you and sometimes decision is made by someone else. But then, you know, finding the right model for yourself, and I think is really, really important.
Wonderful. Thank you, Matthew. Let's go with Dan, then Jen, and last but not least, then Michael. Dan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I think it's probably a combination of what's been said before. I think depending on the situation, if you're going into the job, I 100% agree that it needs to be a job that is values aligned to you, and compromising on that causes you personal issues, quite honestly. You know, you won't like the job and you probably won't succeed as good as you can. But you know, if you are in a role where the company isn't in a purpose-based organization, there's a couple of things that I would say. One is, in a lot of organizations, they're always striving to do better. They're always trying to achieve goals, and normally they're numerical. One of the things that I think
is interesting with the PBO model, and particularly as we start to look at some of the younger generations coming through in the organizations. Purpose is very, very important to them, whether it's something around climate or just general well-being, sustainability, as Jenny mentioned. So introducing a purpose into the organization is a really, really powerful thing. And I think the acceptance of it now, particularly in the younger parts of the organization, can be a trigger for it. And it's certainly something that will help with retention and results, as we've seen with what we had with Qatar. So I think if I had my thoughts around that, I would be, sort of pushing towards that direction with the leadership team as to, how you can obviously deliver better results, but also bring in an organization which is much more sustainable and much more aligned and more powerful.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. Jen, what's your truth?
Yeah, I think if an organization or people in organizations are contemplating introducing a PBO, first thing I'd want to understand is why, what's their driver for doing that? And that has to be, to my mind, a really powerful reason for wanting to do it, not just to tick a box. Because the amount of time and investment it actually takes to do properly is huge. And I think Michael referred to, we had a really good business cadence. And it was quite interesting because Graham was by nature quite a chaotic character. He wasn't one that enjoyed structure. He was very, what's the saying? If it ain't broken, break it. Rather than, he wasn't a status quo manager by any, but he recognized that in himself. And so he put in place disciplines, cadence, rhythms, which required a great investment. And that could be anything from our weekly exec meeting, which unsurprisingly followed was based on the PBO. We would always work through to what Michael talked about, the quarterly business planning. I mean, to contemplate taking all your leaders out of the organization for 2 days and then putting your whole organization through an alignment exercise is expensive. So unless you're really clear on why you're doing it and what you're prepared to invest, then use a different strategy. Because I think people are very attuned if what you're saying and what you're doing are out of sync, and that lack of authenticity, you get found out pretty quickly. Personally, where I've worked with CEOs who aren't really, either don't get it for whatever reason or aren't genuinely committed, I've found it doesn't work. I found it incredibly difficult to be an individual influencer if your top guy or gal isn't really attuned to it. So find out why are you doing it would be the question I'd ask.
Find out why. Thank you so much, Jen. Michael, what are your thoughts?
What I can share with any business leader who might be listening right now and thinking about going on this, what can be a really wonderful and worthwhile journey, is the things that helped me and that I've seen help a lot in addition to what everybody else has said. Is one is sharing experiences with others who have been on the journey and asking questions to shape my own journey, because it's going to be different than everybody else's. It's not going to be Graham's template for everyone or any other organization that uses this model. So, that I have found incredibly useful, to share experiences with others who use these concepts and then to shape their own journey. And the second one is, and this depends a bit on the personality type of the CEO and the top team too. It's this concept of trusting the process. Because I found that a lot of the magic that comes from this is just simply doing it and not getting too wound up in my thoughts and in my planning and the details of it, but simply trusting the process of going through this with all the people, harnessing the power of everybody's thinking and going through the steps. It's almost like cooking a good dish starts with following the recipe that's in the book, and then over time I can get more sophisticated and make my own tweaks to it. But trusting the process and the recipe that is there, I found that helpful because it already delivers, even if it's not perfect. That's what I can add.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Michael, for those wonderful closing remarks almost. So let's trust the process. You know, let's move things forward and go step by step is what I'm hearing from there, what I'm taking from that. Thank you so much, everyone, for having been part of this very special episode, for sharing your stories, for going down memory lane and, you know, connecting with each other again in the form of a podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here and listening to you. And we look forward to maybe reconnecting sometime soon and wish you all the best going forward. Thank you so, so much, Michael.
Can I ask a favor, Catherine and Dominic, in the process of recording? I just remembered another method, and maybe we can use that in closing. And
sure.
In our meetings as an exec team, we always had a check-in and a check-out. And in the beginning, I thought we were talking about chicken when John said check-in. So obviously, you know, we've done the check-in earlier with our introductions. Maybe we can use the check-out process that we sometimes use also as a check-in, which is our one-word feeling. How am I feeling? How's everybody feeling now in one word? Could be an adjective or a noun. If that's okay, if I crash the process here.
Go for it.
Maybe we can check out with that and go in the same sequence that we had for our introductions.
Absolutely. Jenny, would you like to get started? What's your one word feeling right now?
I suppose it's probably not the word I would want to choose, but the one that's in my head is nostalgic, I suppose.
Fabulous. Nostalgic. We'll take it. We'll take it. Thank you, Jenny. Jan, what's your one word feeling?
Jenny took the very words that literally out of my mouth. I was thinking nostalgic and in a bittersweet sense again. Sort of so many good memories and good and bad.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jan. Dan, what is your one word feeling?
Mine would be inspired.
Fantastic. So we'll take inspired from Dan. Michael, what's your one word feeling?
Enriched over the course of 15 years. Still enriched.
Fabulous. Moving on, very enriched, to JT. What is your one word feeling?
Proud. Proud that we've had this experience that brought us all together and can still talk about it 13 years ago. And that I was part of that, like you all were. It's just a wonderful feeling.
Fabulous. Thank you, John. And Matthew, what's your one word feeling?
Better. I feel better for doing this. It's been really great. So thank you very much.
Fabulous. Thank you so much to all of you for being here.
How do you feel?
I think with that, how do I feel? I feel very at ease right now. I've just been able to go on this beautiful journey with all of you, and at ease is, I think, the best word for that. Dominic, what's your one word feeling?
My one word feeling is amazed to see. Oh yeah, it's amazed to see what's possible if I get people together who go in the same direction and just see the beauty and, like, looking in your faces, how you feel looking back at having had that experience. It's so wonderful. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, everybody.
That's it for today with Vierklang Strategy Coaching in our Chief of Anything podcast. If you would like to discover the impact of Vierklang Strategy Coaching for your company, then simply click on the link in the description and get in touch with us.